Here's a song by Pete Seeger, a song that I love very much. Where have all the flowers gone? Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? Young girls pick them, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn?
She realized one day she couldn't keep up the pretense anymore. There was no way to look the way they know that she should look. So she simply removed herself from view. Totally practical.
Well,
did she handle 150 letters a day and make phone calls all around the world all the time?
Yeah, well, you know, many of the beautiful women, Hedy Lamarr, she removed herself from the public eye, and she wouldn't even let her kids come to see her. They had to call her on the phone. And they said
But Marlena did the same with all of us. I couldn't just show up at her apartment. The concierge wouldn't let me up. But, you know, my wife and I, because we lived in London, she was in Paris until 81, you know, we were always the ones who were close, as well as Maria in Switzerland. And so if she needed something, she'd say, could you come and take care of this or that for me? And I'd go and take care of it. Mm-hmm. And if I was driving through Paris, going down to see my mother or something with Sandy, I'd phone her up and say, Mas, do you want us? We're going to be driving through Paris. Would you, you know, let us come and say hi? And she would say, yes, that's fine. And we'd go up and we'd spend 2-3 hours with her, have a meal with her, and then she'd stuff our luggage full of things that she's prepared food wise.
Her beef soup, her beef bouillon.
No. She knew my wife liked a thing called Ray, which is skate. My wife loves skate in Aspic, and Marlena made the best skate in Aspic you could possibly imagine. I mean, it's just wonderful. And so she'd always send us home with that. There's a funny story, actually. Michael and I, we were in boarding school in Switzerland, and we were going back to London and going through Paris, and Marlena had just come back from her Russian tour, and she said, what time does your train get in? Because we were taking the train back. And I said, 6:30 in the morning. She said, I'll meet you at the train station. We went, 6:30 in the morning. Okay, fine. So the train pulls in. It has a half hour there while passengers get on and off, and she's there. And she has the guy, the porter, put two suitcases on for us to take to my mother. I look at Michael. Michael looks at me. We have to go through customs in England. This isn't going to be pretty. We knew this wasn't going to be pretty. So we kiss her and say goodbye and everything else. And she says, as the train's pulling out, the windows open, she says, and as soon as you get to London, make sure you put all that in the refrigerator. And I go, what the heck is in here? So we get to London, and because we're students coming back, you know, from school, they let us through. They didn't search the luggage. Well, just as well. There were 6 2-kilo cans of beluga caviar.
To send to your mom?
6 2-kilo cans. My mother looks at this, and she says, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? It's all going to go rotten before anybody could possibly eat. That's 4.5 pounds of beluga caviar.
Yikes.
So she called everybody we knew in London. She said, bring a spoon, bring lemon, bring toast, come and eat caviar. And for like 12 hours, people came to our house and just ate caviar. It was bizarre. But that's totally Marlena. You know, she's just, what was she going to do with the caviar they gave her to bring to Paris? You can't freeze it. You got to eat it. So she gave it to us to eat.
Well, David Niven wrote in his book that she was one of the most generous women, and if you were sick, she'd be the first one at your door,
yep,
bringing
yep
you stuff you'll need yep to get better. And he loved her. He thought she was just an amazing woman. And
David Niven was one of the nicest human beings I've ever met.
Oh, you knew him? I loved him.
He was the nicest, most genuine, sweetest man. And if your listeners haven't read his wonderful book, The Moon's a Balloon, I would recommend that they go out and get a copy, because they'll have a wonderful Christmas holiday.
They will. I second it, because I have often said what a great – oh, I would have loved to have been able to talk to him. What a wonderful –
He was such a nice guy. We found a 16-millimeter movie of him with Bridges, Marlena Schoeffer, in Palm Springs, and they'd had a little fender bender, and David was in the video. Well, it's now video. It was a movie. And there's David and Bridges trying to bend the fender off of the tire, and David looking completely exasperated. So I took this little video clip to him in Switzerland when I saw him. He lived in Rougemont, and I took it to him, and I said, just in case you forget this, you used to be a car mechanic. And he looks at me and says, what are you talking about? So I showed him the thing. And he said, I forgot that. You know, we got that thing off the tire. We did, and we got all the way back to L.A. And then the tire went flat, but it lasted till we got to L.A. I mean, he was just so wonderful.
You got to meet amazing people, I have to say. You know,
well, just, you know, if you're old enough, you meet a lot of people.
Yes, but I don't meet the people you meet. And I, you know, but also I wouldn't have met the people you met, because I wasn't in the same circles, plus I wasn't old enough to have met them. But I loved David Niven, and I agree with you. His book, he's witty. He is just a wonderful writer. And I know a lot of people love that book. And I have often told my listeners and the people who come to my page that it's a fabulous book, as I have said about your mother's book, which is amazing.
Well, mom's book, you know, always people were worried that it was going to be like Christine Crawford's book, Mommy Dearest.
Right.
And yes, there are some things in the book in which she does feel that she has to set the record straight, if only to show what you shouldn't do. You know, Mom said something very interesting. She said, I had the greatest upbringing in the world because I learned some things that absolutely I couldn't get anywhere else. But I also learned what not to do as a mother. And if you talk to people who know my mother, friends from school, I'll give you a perfect example of my mother. She got in trouble with McDonald's on 86th Street in New York because they wouldn't sell her gift vouchers anymore because she was giving them to people on the street. And my mother said to them, please, would you do that when I bring the cameras here and you tell me that you won't sell me any more gift vouchers? They said, but you don't understand. You give these people who are down and out on the street gift vouchers, and they come in here and buy food, but they also use the bathroom, and we don't want them using the bathroom. My mother said, please repeat that for a camera. I'm going to come around with a film crew. And they never stopped selling her gift vouchers because she wouldn't give money to people on the street. She'd give them something she could
get. Good for her.
That's typical of my mother.
Well,
absolutely typical.
You could see that she had a generous spirit and a generous heart there. One question I have to ask you, Michael, on you, in one of the interviews that I've read you've done, you call her a governess, but wasn't she, and your mother called her the rhinoceros, wasn't she the woman that Marlene met when they were vacationing where the Kennedys were? She came up like they thought it was amazing.
No, no, no.
Oh, it wasn't?
No, no. No, she was a hanger-on to that woman. She was sort of a sidekick.
So why in the world would your mother, how old was your mom when she moved in with this woman?
16 to 17. She didn't move in. The woman moved in because Marlena was busy traveling and doing films, and Marlena wanted to have free time to be with her lovers at the time,
right,
and left this woman in charge, which is, you know, on one side is a mistake. Do I think Marlena did it willfully? No. Do I think she did it negligently? Yes. And as a parent, you shouldn't make that kind of mistake. This woman was a lonely predator, and my mother didn't name her on purpose because she didn't want to you know, it wasn't about punishment. It wasn't that my mother is anti-lesbian or anything
else.
It's just inappropriate to leave a child. There was a wonderful thing that happened to my mother and I. She was on German TV promoting the book back in 93 in Hamburg, and she talked about this on TV, and the commentator says, but how can a woman rape another woman?
Are you kidding?
My mother said,
oh,
no, I'm not kidding. And so my mother laid into him, explaining what rape really was. It's about violence. It's not about sex and so on. And she set the record straight. Well, the next morning, my mother and I are at Hamburg Airport about to get on a plane. And the woman serving us coffee at this little coffee bar. And it's time to pay and go. And the woman says, I can't take your money. My mother says, what do you mean you can't take the money? She says, you did for me last night and cleared my life up, and now I'm going to be able to heal. And they talked. We missed our plane. They were hugging and kissing for about an hour because this girl had been raped by a stepmother. And nobody would ever believe that such a thing was possible because a woman can't rape a woman and so on. And my mother, setting that record straight, she said, you know, doing the book, that made it all worthwhile. If I can just help one person.
And I'm sure she helped more than one. I'm sure she did.
Of course. But that's why she put it in the book. She didn't. And again, she knew that by putting that in the book would somehow seek to punish Marlena. That's why the book wasn't published while Marlena was alive.
Right.
Because it wasn't, as I said, it wasn't willful by Marlena. It wasn't something that, you know, Marlena wasn't trying to rob a bank. I mean, it's not like that.
She did not know. But Maria never told her, right?
Correct. But did Marlena know something happened? Yes, because it was reported to her, and then the woman was let go precipitously because I think the gardener said something to somebody else and so on. And it was like, ooh, this is not good. So Poppy probably straightened it out. I mean, I never really got into it because it doesn't matter. There are things that adults do to their children or with their children that are inappropriate. And you know, what happened to Tommy is completely wrong. And my mother is right to put that as an example of what you shouldn't do in life. You don't cover things up by destroying the person.
Right. That's just keep her wrong. In drugs, put her in asylums, do these things, which were horrible. Yeah. And like she was responsible. She got herself pregnant, like almost, you know, it's like she keeps doing these things. And I found that so sad for her. But your mother and she had this wonderful bond ever since your mom was a child, because she knew that she was such a sweet, sensitive soul. And your mother was very drawn to her because your mother was not like that. And she wanted to be all American apple pie and Thanksgiving and the whole nine yards.
My mother was super Thanksgiving. Let me tell you a story. When Hawaii and Alaska were made states, my mother decided she was going to have a blowout Thanksgiving for all our friends in New York.
Uh-huh.
And she made one dish for each state. We had 50 different dishes.
Oh, my God.
Table.
All by herself, or did she have help?
No, she did all by herself. Mom's a great cook. She spent a whole week preparing Thanksgiving. Mom is an American through and through. You know, people don't know my mother was in the USO as well.
Yeah.
She went over to Europe, and people think, oh, the war was over. Not really. There were still killings and retribution and danger. And my mother was in Italy and then in Germany. And I met some of the soldiers who were in charge of the USO at that time. And they told me some fairly harrowing stories about my mom. And because it was a dangerous place to be.
Of course. I like how you admit it in the book. And to me, it makes perfect sense about your grandma, you know, that she went to entertain the troops. Orson Welles was with her, reading minds and doing things like that. And Danny Thomas and whatever.
Yep.
But your mother, your grandmother also, you know, sent the troops off on their merry way after, you know, giving them a good night.
Yep. Well, you know, anything she could do to bolster their efforts against Hitler, she'd do.
I thought that was, you know what? What a trooper. I just loved her for that, you know, and she thinks nothing of it. And the same as we're saying that there were lesbians, your grandma, you know, I think she most likely preferred men, but she also had women who were in her life.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, I think it's one of the reasons Truman didn't care for her very much, because Bess Truman thought that my grandmother was way too loose for her. But Marlena's role, as far as sex is concerned, was so far in advance of anything of the age. She didn't see anything wrong, whether it's a man or a woman. If there's love and there's caring and there's some physical attraction, why shouldn't they?
She was way ahead of her time, way ahead of her time.
And it isn't that she was promoting one thing or the other, but it just seemed to her to be a matter of practicality. You know, you don't have the right to decide that this human is better than that human.
And love is love, and you can feel attraction and love of a human being,
and not being a sex. It's kind of like she always felt that men's clothing is far more practical to travel in than
women's
clothing.
Oh, she looked gorgeous, but she rocked that men's clothing, boy.
Right. Well, and Poppy was able to give her Knees Inn, the other companies that made really good suits, and Savile Row and so on. If she was coming over on I think it was the Normandy, and she got a telegram from her agent in Paris saying, be warned, the prefect of police has threatened that if you come to Paris in men's clothing, you will be arrested. That's
Why?
Against the law in Paris. Because at the time, it was against the law in Paris.
But what if it was men's style, woman's clothing?
Well, there was no such thing. It's Marlena who made men's style women's clothing. So anyway, she got this telegram and went, oh, really? So she changed into her most immaculate suit and came the boat train came into the train station in Paris, and she was met by the police, and she shook their hand and walked with them. And the next day, the prefect of police sent her a bracelet in apology for having threatened her.
Of course. How could they? Once they meet this woman and see the absurdity of it. You met Yul Brynner and others of her paramours. Tell us about Yul.
Yul was a Swiss, but people don't know that he was Swiss.
I found that out in your mom's
book. Yeah, he was a very well-educated Swiss man who spoke several languages. Wonderful voice. I mean, a voice that would enchant anybody. And he was a bit cold, but polite and nice to Michael and I. And really not very involved, because he was working. And he was working on Broadway at a time when you were doing 8 performances a week. And they were really taxing performances in The King and I.
My God, those dances. Yikes.
And just doing the costumes and shaving his head and all that had to be done. I think that, you know, if he had any time for us at all, was kind of very nice of him. I think Michael and I got to know other of her friends, some of whom were lovers and some weren't. People like Edward R. Murrow and Harold Arlen, the songwriter, the Wizard of Oz. I think Hemingway was the one that Michael and I liked the best. We didn't have a lot of time to talk to him, but he was really a nice man. Burt Bacharach, we always liked. We were teenagers by the time we met Burt, and he was like a grown-up kid himself, so we had more in common with him, which was kind of nice. We used to play.
He ended up marrying Angie Dickinson pretty soon after.
Right, Angie was a friend always. We liked Angie a lot.
Did Marlena like Angie?
She was pissed at Angie because Angie took Bert away from her as a conductor and composer. So that she was angry at that. She also felt that Bert was a little ungrateful because she had found Dionne Warwick for Bert, and she encouraged Bert in his music thing and opened doors for him in that area. But actually, all of that was fair in the end. And as soon as he and Angie got married, I met Angie in Rome when she was doing a movie called Cast a Giant Shadow. There was Mike Douglas and Angie and a few other, and John Wayne and a few other people. And they were all really nice to us kids. I was 16 at the time, 15, 16. They were all really nice people. You know, on a movie set, everybody tends to be a happy family. And I think about a year after he and Angie married, you know, Marlena was fine with it. And then astrology was, you know, just one of the fads, or maybe not a fad, wrong word, obsessions. You know, she'd call Carol Ryder, who is a famous astrologer,
right,
and say, you know, is this a good time to fly or bad or whatever? And I don't know, he was pretty good at predicting stuff, so who am I to say that it's all nonsense? It just doesn't seem terribly scientific, but that's okay.
But it was funny because your mom wrote that he would give your grandmother information and she would ignore it.
Quite often. You know, she took it when she needed to and passed on it when she didn't need to, I suppose. I don't know. Just, yeah, Carol Ryder was a very interesting fellow because he was, I could never decide whether he was really human. He was androgynous to the max.
You didn't know if he was human.
Well, it's really interesting because, you know, as a kid, you know,
Yes, of course.
It isn't that he wasn't dressed as a man and behaved as a man, but there was no masculinity there at all. But there was nothing else in its place. It was really interesting.
There was feminine or masculine?
Nope, none. Just a terribly nice man, gentle, sweet man. But not, you know, geez, it was odd. You know, as a kid, you know, hey, that's a guy, that's a gal, you know,
right.
That's a guy who wants to be a gal or this
yeah.
and thing. You know, and also I come from a generation when, you know, people worried more about identification. Thank God today we don't. But it always struck me interesting that it was the only human I think I've ever met that I really couldn't tell you what sex he was.
I want to ask you, who was your favorite of Marlena's friends or
paramours,
exactly.
Well, you know, it depends on whether you're talking about people that she had intimate relations with or people that she didn't have intimate relations only because circumstances didn't work out.
Uh-huh.
So if it's the latter, then Hemingway, because he was the most interesting.
I bet.
But they never had anything else, and maybe John Wayne, too, because as my mother quite correctly wrote in the book, he said to her, I never wanted to be part of the stable.
I thought that was fabulous, because yeah, you can see there are some wonderful candid photos of your grandma with John Wayne.
Yeah, they were pals.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, Jimmy Stewart, there's a person that I really like. In fact, my wife went to school with his two daughters, and they're still friends. Jimmy Stewart was a really sweet, nice man. And I think that, I guess, either Jimmy Stewart or Brian Ahern were the two that I liked most.
Oh, you did end up meeting Brian, because I know your mother really liked him. He was so kind to her.
Oh, yeah. He lived in Switzerland. I was in school there, so I'd see him like once or twice a year. You know, David Niven wasn't a paramour, and no intention of being. David Niven had to which class for that.
How about someone you didn't like very much? Not that you hated him. It just was a feeling you got or something.
I think probably Eric Maria Remarque.
The guy who wrote All's Quiet on the Western Front. And she had a long, long, long term friendship.
And Charles Boyer as well. Those guys were not interested in kids at all. And I met them when I was a kid.
Huh. And they were just kind of like ignoring you and like you're just this annoying brat in the room.
Children should be seen and not heard.
Right.
And that's okay. That's what they wanted. But Michael and I didn't ever have any affinity for those people. But, you know, people like Harold Arlen, he was just a blast. I mean, he'd sit down the piano and knock out tunes and have fun. And, you know, while he was waiting for her to show up, and then she'd show up and Michael and I would then go to another room and, you know, wait around until they finished talking 10, 15 minutes, and then we'd get in the cab and go home with her, and she'd go back to work. It was, you know, Harold Arlen was an interesting person, really interesting. I mean,
he's the one who wrote Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Right. And one of the people that I know I wish I had met, that they weren't lovers, but my goodness, did she love his Where Have All the Flowers Gone, Pete Seeger. I mean, there's a talent.
I love that song. And what's funny is your mother is the one who said to her, "Mom, sing it." It's, and your mother was like, "Oh, it's a children's song." But I love that song. It's so beautiful. And yeah, he did it. Yes. Did your mom?
Well, you know, the thing is, up until, you have to remember, up until the end of the war, her signature song was either "See What the Boys in the Back Room Will Have" if she's trying to rouse the troops' adrenaline, or you know, "Underneath the Lamppost, da 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 da," you know, that one.
Yeah.
So those two were her songs, and one was schmaltzy to make you long for being home, and the other one is, you know, "Hey, see what the boys in the back room will have," right? In other words, sex. When you're singing to 5,000 soldiers on a hillside, it really had an effect. Danny Thomas once told me, he said, "I'm lucky we ever got out of these places alive. They were going to, you know, rip the place up." But after the war, she was looking for a song that said, "No more war. For God's sake, no more war." And she couldn't find one. And Mom found "Where Have All the Flowers Gone?" And I have to say, Marlena really loved it and adopted that song and sang it with a passion that brought everybody in the audience to tears, no question.
I am going to have to try to find that on YouTube, and I'm going to post that when I post this podcast. Okay.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, because I've never seen it, but she, you know, didn't really trust doctors. Thank goodness for your mother, because she had arterial sclerosis, and she could have lost her legs.
Yeah, well, she had the accident in Australia, and the wound in her leg was not healing. So mm-hmm. my mother got her taken to DeBakey in Houston. And Michael DeBakey, who became a great family friend, what a wonderful human being. I mean, a great human being. DeBakey said to her one day, after examining her and everything, said, "Were you ever frozen? The way the valve that separates the blood vessels down to your legs is, it's been damaged. It's got scar tissue." And she says, "Yeah, in the Second World War, we got frozen one night in the plane. We were traveling, and I froze, and it took me about a day to come around." And that's why she had the bad circulation to her legs. Ooh. So he repaired that valve, and the blood flow was tremendous, but it hurt her a lot because the legs hadn't had that much blood in a while. But, you know, she broke her collarbone once. A guy pulled her off the stage into the orchestra pit, shaking her hand. I mean, she was a trooper.
Then
she had broken ribs, and she went, oh, yeah. I mean, you know, really, she got hammered, you know, and got hurt. And it just happens. There's nothing, you know, you can't turn the clock back. But, of course, for her, she had there was a time in Argentina that she had fallen and she had broken ribs and her arm was strapped to her side. She did the whole performance and everything with broken ribs that were separated.
She was such an amazing. How long did she perform? I know your mom was there with her. Like you said, she was her agent, sort of her stage manager.
75.
Wow.
75. Yeah, she was 75 last time.
And that was because she could no longer pretty much stand there.
She couldn't maintain the physical presence. I mean, you know, when you're 75 years of age, unless you're going to do a whole bunch of plastic surgery and everything else, you're
and
not going to maintain.
And even then, Peter, in those days, and even now, when I see women who are 75 with plastic surgery, you know, look like they're 75 with plastic surgery. They don't look young. So
it wasn't her thing. She owed the people who loved her more. And so she said, right, that's enough.
She was amazing. And I think your mother was amazing. And I loved how much she loved you boys. And like I said, I love your dad. How's your mom doing? She's still hanging in there.
She's great. She's 95 this year. And she's living with my brother in California and looking after him, and he's looking after her. And she's being, as she said to me on the phone the other day, "At this point in my life, I'm no longer Dietrich's daughter. I'm just a Hausfrau, and I'm happy with that."
Well, she wrote one of the best books celeb biographies I have ever read. I read it about 11 years ago, and when you were coming, and I knew how much I loved it then, I gave it to my ex father-in-law. He never read it because he was into the internet, this, that. But I couldn't talk it up enough. And then I reread when I knew you were coming on the show, and boy, it just got me like the first time. Amazing book. And you had an amazing life, and you're kind of like, I'd say the keeper of her flame in a way, right?
Yeah, it's my job. I manage the estate and all the rest, you know, besides being a literary agent and running the Dietrich ancillary business around the world and dealing with a museum in Berlin and all that. I also write books in my time, because Marlena, she's a funny person. When she passed away, there were about 1,500 paperback books in her apartment, most of them thrillers. She loved crime and thrillers. And
true crime, or just sort of like Perry Mason?
No. Just novels.
Yeah.
She was a great consumer of novels. And so we gave them all to the library at the American Embassy, because they have a library for people visiting Paris. And I got a phone call from them later on. You do realize she's annotated pages? This is Marlena's handwriting in a book. This is valuable. I said, no, to share it with people. She'd have liked. And so the woman then called me back about a month later. She said, I've been reading some of her comments. Ooh, she's really good.
Well, she was good, because if you listen to some of her comments in that book, I'm like, wow, she's so. And she made me laugh as well. I mean, when I'm reading some of the stuff about her, she could be very funny. One thing I found fascinating is that she and Mae West were sort of like neighbors, right?
Pals, yeah. Their dressing rooms were next door to each other at Paramount, and they were pals.
But they never got together out of the studio.
No. They were both exactly the same. Oh, we'll do for the man what he needs to do, but then we're finished.
Right. And they each had this incredible image that they had till the end. Look at Mae. She did Sextet, playing a 28-year-old woman. She was in, what's that funky film that John Huston was in as well? Myra Breckinridge. She was, you know, another one, like your mother, that was, you know, a force to be reckoned with. I read that you had, that someone bought the rights to make a movie of your mom. Of your grandmother.
Right, that's okay. We're right in the middle of those conversations at the moment. I have placed my mother's book in the hands of directors since 92, mm-hmm. several times. Louis Malle was in the process of wanting to make the movie when he passed away. Pedro Almodovar looked at it seriously for a while, but thought maybe in English he wasn't going to be able to cope, but maybe now he will, who knows. Steven Spielberg absolutely wanted to make it, but then DreamWorks broke up and there was no follow through.
Right.
So we sort of hit and miss over the years. At the moment, there's a conversation with some very talented people to do a TV miniseries for Germany. With Warner's, and Warner's is thinking of bringing it over here, part of their HBO Max.
That's what I
service.
Thought. That is how I felt. Miniseries.
Yeah. So we hope that's going to happen, you know, but until it's actually in the can, I'll believe it when I see it.
I know, because I have friends who have also had their books optioned, and, you know, time passes, nothing happens, and then it comes again, and someone options a book. And so it's a lot of work to get that done. But in it, one of your interviews you wrote, and you were so correct, that you can't do a 2-hour or 4-hour thing on Marlene. You have to do at least 6 to 8, and as a miniseries. And who in the heck could you cast as Marlena?
You know, there's a saying that casting is a fruitless exercise, so it has a nickname, casturbation. what you want to find is somebody who can portray Marlena, not try and look like her. You know, there are some incredibly talented actors who, you look at Cate Blanchett playing Bob Dylan in the movie. Now, if I said to you, Cate Blanchett's going to play Bob Dylan, everybody said, you're crazy. But if you see that movie, she's more Bob Dylan than anybody else who's playing Bob Dylan.
Right.
So, right. Now, okay, visually, maybe not what people want. I understand that. But as a performance, that was impeccable. So who's going to play Marlena? First of all, I don't know. Second of all, the field is open. There are some wonderful, wonderful upcoming new talent who can pull it off. And I'm only hoping that one of them, you know, gets the part that they need. I mean, there's some actresses out there that really are astounding. And I think that it's strange because Hollywood is starting to develop, without a studio, they're starting to develop real talent again. And that's encouraging.
I've noticed that. And also, women that don't have the same nose job, girls that don't have the same lips. I've noticed some different things coming out, and I'm very pleased with that. Different looks, not just this, you know, this totally
uniformity.
Who the heck, you know, you don't look different from anybody else. So exactly. I am very pleased with that. Also, I mean, her story should be, I think, immortalized. I think she's, like I said, people love her. They know her. Children know her. Look at TCM. Look at the vintage radio stations. Look at podcasts. Look at radio shows. People love her. I love her. I mean, I watch her movies, and I love my favorite, to be honest, I think is, well, I like Stage Fright because to me it seems a lot like her. And I like Witness to the Prosecution, and I loved her whole thing about
it. She played her mother in that movie.
Really?
Oh, yeah, that was absolutely her mother. When my mom saw that, she said, oh, my God, that's my grandmother.
Was your grandmother a toughie?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, old German aristocracy, yeah, sure.
Was she hard on your mom, on grandma?
Yeah, demanding, absolutely. But, you know, you get that ramrod back spine going, you know, at an early age. I mean, that's what you did. They're Prussians. The whole family was Prussians. People talk about, you know, my mother's father, you know, as being a policeman. No, he was part of the Royal Guard. That's where you sent the second son. The first son became von Dietrich, like in England you become Lord so-and-so or Sir so-and-so. The second son goes into the military. And that's where he gets rank. So he became a colonel in the Royal Imperial Guard, which was green uniform. So it's, you know, people never understand how that aristocracy thing used to work. In Britain, it's still evident, but in Germany, it's not evident really anymore.
How many languages do you speak? You seem like you speak a lot of them.
French and English, a bit of German, a bit of Italian.
I have to ask you if this is true, that you met your wife when you were 13 and you married her and you guys are still married. What a beautiful, beautiful story. Sandy.
Yeah, we met in 63 and became friends. And then when I was 16, we became, I don't know the right word, boyfriend and girlfriend.
Right.
Wasn't lovers, boyfriend and girlfriend. And we were always together, and then we broke up for 6 or 8 months when we were 20, yeah. And then 21, we got together and got engaged, married at 22, and we've been married a long time.
That's amazing. Just like your mom, you know, and you guys, you know, she doesn't have a Yul Brynner, and you don't have Tommy. I think that's pretty darn good. Anyway, I'm sorry, go on.
I got lucky.
You did. I wish I got lucky.
As Marlena said, I married above my station, which was a good thing.
Yes. Thank you so much. You have been fabulous. I've learned so much more. And
thank you, Grace.
I am so grateful you came on. This is such a... I am thrilled. And I'm sure my audience will be enthralled. And why don't you tell us... I'll link whatever you want me to link, but you are an author and you write fiction with an element of truth because you've been there. You've done that.
Right. My new book comes out in January on the 20th. It's called Kidnapped on Safari, and it takes place in East Africa. And it's the third in the series with a wonderful person called Mbuno, who was a tracker for Bill Holden and all those people.
Cool.
Back in, and I sort of immortalized him in this book, as well as a guy called Pero Baltazar, who's a TV documentary producer, taking a leaf out of my own background. And they get involved in solving really terrible crimes and saving the day. And Mbuno usually saves the day.
Well, that sounds good to me. So you let me know. And is there a website you have or where?
Yeah, I'll send that to you, Grace.
Yeah, send me all the links and I will post them when I post the podcast. And
thank you.
I just want to say I am so thrilled to have had you on, and you are such a wonderful guy. You're swell. Gee, you really are. You really are
well,
swell.
You've been very kind.
And
you're very kind.
I've enjoyed this immensely. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I thought this was a wonderful podcast. And
All right. Thanks
so much again. And bye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Grace.
You are
Goodbye.
So welcome. Bye-bye.
Here's a song by Pete Seeger, a song that I love very much. Where have all the flowers gone? Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? Young girls pick them, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the young girls gone? Long time passing. Where have all the young girls gone? Long time ago. Where have all the young girls gone? Gone to young men, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the flowers gone? time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? Young girls pick them, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever?